The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright, the power to create a happier, healthier life drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected, a place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules in beautiful Southern California, and wherever you are in the world today, I invite you to join me in the paradise that I have created. It's absolutely beautiful, peaceful, and luxuriously relaxing. So join me and let's have some fun. Tonight we have a brilliant man joining us, Jason Lincoln Jeffers, and he wrote the book called The Next Human. It is extremely powerful as it guides us into a fast-paced evolution. Jason and I are going to get into some really deep discussions, so settle in, kick your feet up, unless you're driving, of course, and get ready to put your thinking cap on as we talk about human evolution right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Law of Attraction Radio Network, enhancing the well-being of millions of listeners worldwide. LOARadionetwork.com is heard through 25 different internet radio stations, as well as iTunes Radio, Stitcher.com, and our mobile apps. The Law of Attraction Radio Network, your trusted source of daily inspiration at LOARadionetwork.com.
Here's an update on our cruise of a lifetime to Mayan country. Royal Caribbean Cruise Line will not be raising the rates for the time being. And we have a special announcement that Lee Harris will actually be singing on the cruise. So not only do we have Law of Attraction coach Constance Arnold, astrologer Jean Wiley, channel psychic Lee Harris, we are also introducing holistic coach Enzo Giovanni to you as well. Plus, we may be tossing in a special hypnosis session on releasing the fears that block you from reaching the stars. So sign up today by going to lawofattractioncruise.com. That's lawofattractioncruise.com.
Need help realizing your dreams? As a hypnotherapist specializing in the law of attraction, Jules Johnson can help you to break through your critical mind into your manifested dream. Get started today by going to lawofattractiontools.com. Set up a personal Skype video or phone session. Law of Attraction Tools is there to help you turn your desires into reality. That's lawofattractiontools.com.
Okay, we are back. Hey, let's talk about the cruise for a second. It's still time to come aboard. Our good friend Lee Harris is actually going to be singing, so we have him performing in the lounge as our last workshop of the cruise. I'm so excited. So as you see, this is not our usual cruise format. We have dancing and singing and law of attraction experts, and it is all magical. We are going to the city of Tulum, Mayan country, 1 week before the end of the Mayan calendar, and we are meditating on the beautiful grounds in sunlight and cool breeze from the ocean. And yes, I'm going to be doing a very, very special hypnosis session at the beginning of the cruise as well. You know, the value of these workshops is truly incredible, because if you had to attend each one separately, you would be paying well over $1,000 just to attend the workshops. And now you get to attend the workshops, go on this fabulous cruise, and you'll be able to dine with the experts and get to know them on a personal basis. You know, I've actually done more business on these cruises than I imagine happens on a golf course. So it's fabulous. Sign up today. Go to lawofattractioncruise.com. And real fast, I am getting a fantastic response to the non-hormone HCG weight release program with hypnosis. It's working so well. My clients are absolutely loving this because they're dropping the pounds and inches so fast, and it's so painless. Please do yourself a favor and go to lawofattractiontools.com to get more information on these two programs. It's so easy and it's so fun as you watch the fat melt away. Don't forget lawofattractiontools.com. Now let's talk about some good news. This was actually reported on CBS News. Alex Ellman runs a big business, something hard to imagine after she lost her sight in her 20s. But Ellman says that losing her sight actually helped her to focus on finding her success. Ellman's father planted a hillside vineyard in western Massachusetts in the 1980s, and it's exactly where Ellman fled during the darkest period of her life. When she was 27 years old, she went completely blind due to complications from juvenile diabetes. She recalled, "I hid in my home. I hid in the place. To me, that was the safest place in the world." So she came back to her roots, and eventually she found a new way forward. It was at a blind wine tasting years before Ellman lost her sight that she first realized that she had an ability to discern the flavor of wine using only her sense of smell and taste. She slowly began to realize that her sense of smell and taste actually grew after she became blind without her dependence upon sight. Today, Ellman is the founder of Alex Ellman Wines, a growing portfolio of organic wines from around the world. And Ellman doesn't work alone. Her assistant, a guide dog named Hanley, is something of a wine snob and quite a beggar. Hanley travels with Ellman to all the wineries from South America to Europe. At first, Ellman resisted the idea of having a seeing-eye dog. Now it's hard to imagine her life or her business without him. She said, "When somebody tells me something is organic and I don't really believe it because something tastes off with the wine, I'll just put it in front of Henley's face. And if he likes the wine, he'll actually go in and sniff it. But if it's not right, he'll turn his head away. And Henley actually gets in the dirt with me. He scratches around and he makes sure that we see the earthworms and butterflies. That's how we know that the soil is actually organic and that there's no chemicals in the soil." Ellman explained, "If the wines are not manipulated and made correctly, I'm really pretty good. I can usually get the country right. I can often get the vineyard. And I even get the price point." This is fantastic. Ellman told CBS News she believes the loss of her vision was a gift. She said, "It allowed me to pay attention to what I thought was important and also to be able to teach people that the broken hangnail is not such a big deal. You know what I mean? Don't sweat the small stuff, but don't sweat the big stuff either, because believe it or not, you can deal with it. It is actually more important to adapt to the situation. Go with the flow, and you will be all right. Because you can't change it anyway, right? It's just what it is." Wow, this is very, very important to remind us that we just have to go along with the flow of life and know and trust that everything in our life, no matter what's going on around us, everything is going to be fine. Just open up to all the good within life, let it flow to you, and know that you are safe and secure within the universe. So let's get on with tonight's show. Jason Lincoln Jeffers is a spiritual teacher, life coach, fine artist, astrologer, entrepreneur, inspirational speaker, and authority on metaphysics. After suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome, anxiety, and depression for over a decade, his life was utterly transformed by an ancient mystical inner body experience known as a Kundalini awakening. His mission is to help humanity awaken to its divinity and evolve into the next human. Let's welcome Jason Lincoln Jeffers to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you, Jules. It's very good to be here.
I must say that your book, The Next Human, is really like three books rolled into one. The information in there just keeps on rolling. It is incredible. It's very good.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
You know, it deals with the metaphysics all the way to the physical wellness of a person. So it really does include A to Z. It's a very, very, very well written book.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So let's get started talking about you first so that the listeners get more information about you and why you wrote such a heavy-duty book to begin with.
Right. Well, it was not my intention to do that. In fact, when I was writing it, I was writing in a completely different format. I had no idea how many pages it was until I put it into book format. When I first started writing it in 2010, a couple of years ago, it was just, you know, every now and then inspiration would come and I would write it down. It was mainly research oriented for about the first year and a half. And it wasn't until January, in December, I took a vacation, went to Florida for a couple of weeks and walked along the beach, meditated, and was in a period of stillness for a while. And then when I came back, I lived in St. Louis, the Midwest. For some reason, it just started every morning around 3 a.m. I would wake up, and that impulse to get in front of the computer, it just started. It just began, and words just flowed from then on. And every morning after that, it would be about the same. I'd wake up between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. I started going to bed earlier so that I'd get more sleep. And the stillness of the night, everything was quiet, and I just got into that zone. And that's when the book really started to form, was in early January, and then just for 8 months straight, it just continued until it was finally born. And then when I converted it finally into the book form, I was like, holy cow, this is almost 400 pages.
Surprise!
Surprise! So...
Wonderful. Well, your bio states that you're a spiritual teacher, life and wellness coach, author, mystical expressionist, fine artist, evolutionary astrologer, philosopher, metaphysicist, entrepreneur, inspirational speaker, and even a psychic when your father taught you to have or to develop your innate psychic abilities. I would have to say that you're definitely a right brain person.
Well, yes, you could say that for sure. My father trained me since I can remember, at the age of six, as soon as I could write, read and write. Actually, I was reading and writing a little bit earlier than that, but as soon as I could put pen to paper, he was instructing me how to remember my dreams and to write them down, and also then to interpret my dreams. So at a very early age, I was tutored by my father, who was my spiritual teacher, up until the point where he died when I was 24, and he was the age of 88. So he was much older. He was 65 when I was born. So, yes, and of course my mom was much younger, but I had that metaphysical training from very early on. But later, after he died, I became depressed, and I was going through a divorce at the same time, which I mentioned in the introduction of the book. And soon after that, I came down with chronic fatigue syndrome and endured that for many, many years, over a decade, pretty severely. So that kind of forced me within. And so I had to do a lot of introspection. I really became a very keen observer of those around me, my friends and family, and their behavior. And I really observed how they hurt each other and how they hurt me. So all of that became kind of my transformative journey into what I call in the book self-realization, or the evolution into the next human, which is really the same thing.
So you said that you became in a depressive state when your father died. Was your chronic fatigue syndrome, was that due to the depression? Was it due to your emotional states at that time?
Almost certainly. It most certainly stemmed from that. Obviously, there were physical aspects of it too. But as I clearly state in the book, everything that is physical stems from the emotional, right? So the mind controls the body, not the other way around. So any physical disease is always an outlying symptom of something much deeper. And it didn't matter how many diets I tried, how many fasts I went on, how many colonics I went on, how many different alternative modalities that I tried. And I spent upwards of $40,000 in over a period of 10 years trying to physically cure myself of all the disease, not just that I had chronic fatigue, but I had TMJ, I had inner ear disorder, which caused chronic dizziness, I had borderline type 2 diabetes, I had irritable bowel syndrome, systemic kidney, I mean, you just name it, I had it. And so all these diseases, none of them could be cured until I went inward and started focusing on the psyche, on the spirit, on the soul, and on the mind, and started healing those first, right? Then I naturally attracted to me the appropriate modalities, such as the upper cervical care for my inner ear disorder, which I go into in the book, such as the infrared sauna for the mercury detox, which I go into in the book, and all of these wonderful methods, and of course the ketogenic diet, which cured me of the irritable bowel and the systemic candida, all that's gone, and my hormones are in balance. I don't have the hypoglycemia anymore. All of that is behind me simply because I first addressed the inner self, the mind, the soul, and then the body, of course, it comes after that. That's why the physical self in the book is the third chapter in the book. So we address first the mental, which is the ego, in the first chapter. In the second chapter, we address the emotional pain body, which is how the ego manifests itself through the body, right? And so that in and of itself creates disease.
Yeah, I noticed, talking about the book, The Next Human, your major sections of the book starts off with the pseudo-self, goes into the phantom self, and then the physical self. They're all wonderful. I mean, really, you understand how the body works. But my heart jumped when you talked about the mirror self, which, in effect, you are talking about the universal law of attraction. So I kind of wanted to focus in on that because your section on the mirror self is fabulous.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So you say you are who you attract. It's the law. Let's talk about this.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, the mirror self is about transforming relationships. And of course, that's something that everyone can relate to because no one just, I mean, it does happen, it's very rare, but most people have trouble in relationships at some point in their life. They have at least one relationship which brings them a great deal of pain and suffering, right? And so the divorce rate in the U.S. is 50%, but that doesn't mean that the other 50% are living in peace and harmony. and you observe couples and the way they act, sometimes it can be almost embarrassing, especially if they're young. But it doesn't really matter if you're young or old. If you're emotionally arrested at the age of three, then you're going to carry that immaturity into your relationships late into life, right? So it's important to know that you are who you attract in relationships. This is why I call it the mirror self. And, of course, this is the law of attraction, and it does work. And so I never read any books on law of attraction before I wrote this book because I didn't want them to influence me because I knew I was going to be writing some short stories, right? And these stories that I've written are based on truth. I've combined most stories that I wrote in the book played out exactly as they played out. But there are a couple in there that I've combined a couple of stories into one. I've changed the names, of course, and the places. But the dynamic, the emotional behavioral dynamic in the characters in these short stories is all based on what actually happened. So anyway, I didn't want the books to influence me because I knew firsthand that the law of attraction worked. I lived it.
As we all have, yes.
And I know that it works. And so my attempt in that chapter is to convey through these short stories to these characters, which are actually real people in real life, that the universe will always reflect your inner core. Wherever you are, everybody ends up with their partner, their true, what they call soulmate. It's not a twin soul, ideal soulmate, or like a divine soulmate by any means, but it's who you were supposed to be with at any given time. That being said, everybody is where they are on their own evolutionary ladder of consciousness. So if you are angry and if you have a lot of emotional baggage and if you are identified with a pain body, then you're naturally going to attract that in a partner. The universe is going to serve up to you who you are. And a lot of people don't like that because they don't like themselves. That's the whole reason why they're looking for someone else so intently and intensely, because they want to supplant what they don't like inside. See? And it took me a long time to figure that out about myself. I had to go through a lot of pain and suffering. Even though I was only married once and only had one, you know, long-term relationship, I still had these nibbles and bites, so to speak, where I had these short-term relationships. And I don't even call them relationships. I mean, most of the time, I couldn't get past the second date. In fact, my friends would make fun of me that I would go through the entire relationship in two dates. He greeted them to make to this emotional breakup at the end of the second date. And so I saw the pattern. And, of course, I realized that at some point that I was the common denominator in all these failed relationships, and all of these, whether it be just with women or it would be with family members or with friends, or as I also write in the book about work, about the boss relationship. I write about the abusive boss because so many people have so many clients that are abused by their bosses. And I understand because I was abused by every boss I ever had. So the ego takes over in that situation in a superior role environment as a boss. And it takes off and runs with the role, right? In fact, a lot of times we'll see in the workplace somebody who's humble and meek and a great subservient worker, and they get promoted to someone in authority. And within a short period of time, the ego seeking power comes out of hiding. And then all of a sudden, it goes, that power trip goes straight to that person's head. And then they abuse the power. Okay, by controlling other people. And so in the book, I offer tools and guidance. Kriya Shakti, which is the Sanskrit term for spontaneous right action, on how to deal with people like that. Okay, not just your boss, but also with your partner. And, of course, we want to love everyone unconditionally. However, a lot of people mistake unconditional love in a relationship for self-abuse, right?
Yes, but you're saying here that if it's a mirror of ourselves, what we're seeing in that abuser is really ourselves. This is what we have attracted to us because that's what we are really like.
Exactly. And that's what we fear about ourselves. And, of course, the fear from my, this is all suppressed, of course. We don't do this consciously. But if the mind, if you're abusing yourself, your mind is abusing yourself all the time. And that's just what goes on in a lot of people's minds when they don't know it. Then you're naturally going to attract abusive people into your life. That's what I call the passive pain body or the phantom prey. And this passive pain body is constantly playing out itself in the head that in guilt and shame and putting yourself down, the mind is abusing you, right? So naturally, the universe is going to serve up because this is your order, right? It's your order. So it's going to serve up the same people in your life that are going to reflect your thoughts about yourself. So you're exactly right.
Oh, so that boss is really us. And then the abuse person becomes the abuser because it's all about us.
Exactly. Mm. Right. The abuser is... So the only way to get out of that is to recognize the fact that you are, in fact, the cause of it.
Ah.
See, this is where you come out. This is the consciousness. This is the surface coming up, the threshold, just below the threshold of consciousness is where this pain body exists, this phantom self. Now, when you realize that you are the creator of this reality, in other words, you're the one that's creating these people into your life. You're the one that's attracting them. They don't come out of a vacuum, all right? There's a reason that they're attracted to you. And this is what I also go into in Chapter 2 in The Phantom Self about bullying, right? Bullying, predators and prey relationship. But also in The Mirror Self, I talk about the sadomasochistic relationship dynamic. And this is a codependency relationship that operates in a large majority of relationships. But obviously to varying degrees. Some are more severe than others. However, typically it's the male in the predator sadistic role, and then the female plays the masochist, the prey. However, I have seen many, many times where this role is reversed. So, and then, of course, sometimes it shifts. There's power shifts that go back and forth. But this sadomasochistic relationship is so common, and people are unaware that they're in it because of what I call needling or pinpricking. And these are like little mosquito bites that are so inconspicuous, and they're inserted by the predator in the relationship, whoever is abusing the other partner, and are sometimes mistakenly seen as harmless teases, right? However, they do add up over time when they are constants in a relationship dynamic, and especially if you're hosting a heavy pain body, they won't be felt as teases. They'll be absorbed as pain, and of course, the pain body is an addiction to pain. And so therefore, this dynamic will continue to repeat itself, to play itself out over and over again. And then if children are born into the relationship, that only complicates matters further because it doesn't matter how subtle. I mean, the couple doesn't have to be bonking each other over the head or yelling at each other, but it's these subtle, constant pinpricks and needles that go on. And then the anger and then the irritation and the frustration of little things that are consistently going on day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. And then if children come in, they absorb it like a sponge. They feel it. And then that contributes to the formation of their pain bodies. Mm-hmm. And then the cycle of pain just perpetuates.
Okay, that makes so much sense. But let's go on from there. All right, we have these pinpricks, these little tiny things that really infiltrates the pain body. What do we do to counteract that? What can we do to stop feeling the pain other than seeking a divorce? Is there anything that we can actually do?
Yes. The first thing to do is to become conscious of it, to become aware of it, to shine a light on it, and to realize that you don't have to be a pincushion, okay, a walking human pincushion. That's not your burden to shoulder by any means. And really the core message of the book, The Next Human, is to realize your own divinity, okay? And upon this realization, when you start to draw a line in the sand and say, nobody gets across this line, I don't care who they are, that's the only time that I found in my life that I was able to remove myself from the pain. And I actually had to separate from my family for 2.5 years because my pain body had become so heavy and so dense. See, I never fought back. I never said no. I just took it from everyone. I had a very, very, very dense, passive pain body. I didn't want to hurt anybody, right? Kind, compassionate soul. So this is my idea of unconditional love. No, it wasn't unconditional love. It was self-abuse. So my mind rationalized it as unconditional love, and that's why I continued to take it, and eventually one day, and I just blew up. I just couldn't take it anymore, and I left, and I healed. So that, of course, is an extreme case. It may be necessary, but to your question, you don't have to. It may be necessary for you to, of course. But if you can at least acknowledge the fact that you don't have to be treated with disrespect, and then communicate that to your partner or to your boss or your coworker or your friend, whoever's abusing you, and then communicate to them cogently and curtly, and then you're in and you're out, and that's it. You don't want to linger, which gives their pain body a time to emerge and cause an argument, because that's what the predator pain body likes to do. It likes to generate an argument so that it can, get power over you. So you don't want that. But to communicate to whomever is abusing you that you deserve to be treated with respect. And then you're drawing a line and you're saying no more. And you're saying this is a high frequency no. This is not, screaming and yelling at them, stop beating me up. No, that doesn't help. That's just adding fuel to the fire, right?
Right.
You do it very calmly and peacefully. When they are calm, when their pain body is dormant, and so is yours, and so you're peaceful and you're calm, you're in and you're out, and then see if they change. And then if they don't, over time, as long as you can constantly remain peaceful and not judge them, right, and not contribute to their chaos and insanity, then you'd be surprised. There's a lot of relationships that have healed because all it takes is one person to be conscious. And then so therefore you become this conscious light that actually can help to heal other people.
So you're not only saying it to the other person to stop this, what it could be happening is that you're actually saying it to your own inner self, that I deserve better than this.
Exactly.
That's very powerful.
Yeah, it is.
I love it. Okay, now further in the book, you talk about healthy relationships begin with self-mastery, which we're talking about, and wholeness is akin to holiness. So say that, okay, we're awakening and we're being okay with being by ourselves. Does it mean that we have to be alone in order to comprehend who we really are? Or does this mean we have to live or be happier being solitary than in relationships?
Okay. Well, everybody is different. Everybody's on their own path, right? The message that I'm relaying there in that particular section of the chapter wholeness is akin to holiness, is that at least at some time in your life, it doesn't mean you have to become a monk or a nun or declare celibacy, anything like that. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that at least at one point in your life, and it could be a matter of months or years, whatever, that to go within and to discover yourself for yourself and discover that you're already complete without another. And once you discover that, and everybody's different, like I said, some people can discover that within a shorter period. With me, it's taken almost 20 years of being alone. I was married 20 years ago, and I haven't been married since. So everybody's different, but you just take that time to find yourself, capital S-E-L-F, right? That divine self, the higher self that we call it, which is our inner self, and realize that you are connected with the source of all. You already are complete. The only thing that makes you incomplete is your ego. The ego convinces you that you need another to be complete. That's why I call codependency neediness. And it's people think that when they say codependency, there's a number of different codependencies, right? Alcoholism, you know, addiction to drugs, addiction to gambling, addiction to sex, addiction to food. But nobody stops to think, well, codependency with another person really is the most common.
Right, right.
I mean, you have all of these dating agencies now online that people go and they try to find, which is actually better than going to a bar. But it still paints the picture that this is how we're going to find our soulmate, right? By going online and, you know, putting our profile up there, and then we're going to actually attract our soulmate. No. That's not how it works. First you retrieve your soul. In other words, first you become self-realized, realize that you're already complete, you're already whole. Then you attract your mate. It doesn't work in the reverse. This is why over 90%, believe it or not, of the public are not in a true twin soul relationship. They're in an ego love relationship, not a soul love relationship, right? So that's why the divorce rate is 50%. You don't have to take my word for it.
No, the lawyers are making a bunch of money from it.
You better believe they are. So does that answer your question?
Yes, that's great. That's great. Because all of us, I found that I had to separate from people as well in order to stop having the distraction and really fully understand me better. I found that I had to be just completely alone, like a monk for a few years, like you did as well. You separated yourself from your family.
I did. I had to. Because the more you love someone, the harder it hurts when they say things that are going to push your buttons, and that's
right.
What the pain body does. So at that time, the people around me were unconscious. We didn't have a lot of intimacy in our relationships. I'm talking about my family and my friends. And so when that's happening, then it's the phantom. The phantom self is in control of your life. It's in control of their lives, and it's just all this is just a power place going on, and that's pushing buttons, and that's pain. It's constant. I was in pain all the time. I mean, 24/7. And I was working with family as well. And you know, when you're around that environment all the time, then it was killing me. I had to get away. And so the only way I could heal was to just remove myself. I gave myself permission to remove myself really from everyone and just go out alone. I moved to New York. I moved up to, you know, the high-rise building there, and I was alone for a whole year by myself. And, you know, just got away from everybody and then allowed myself time to heal and to really go within and realize that I was the cause of it, that I was projecting still, because I had been for my whole life since I was abused when I was a kid. And then when I finally realized that, in the day that my first nephew was born on September 11th, 2007, when that happened, I realized I wanted to reunite with the family that I had been estranged with. I wanted to be a loving uncle, and I just didn't want to be angry anymore. I had an epiphany. I just started bawling and crying and travailing, and realizing that all the money that I had made from a business, a very successful business, in the 7 years prior, had meant nothing because I was in pain all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Mm-hmm. You know, they say, oh, all these things, if you do all these things, and then you're going to be happy. No, it didn't make me it didn't make me happy because I had lost my family.
Uh-huh.
I had lost my friend. I had lost everything that had meant anything to me. So when I came back, see, with all that, I left my pain body in New York, and I came back to the Midwest to reunite with my family. They were completely different. They had grown too. The separation actually caused them an awakening as well, because they missed me too.
Wow.
See? And so that's when we're out of our heads and into our hearts.
Now that is really important. And you talk about that with the creative self manifesting from your heart. So, let's talk about the importance of the heart, something that we only hear during Valentine's Day or something like that. But actually, I feel that the heart is actually more powerful than the brain.
Well, it is much more powerful. In fact, science is discovering that right now on many levels. There's the Institute of Heart Math, which has been researching this since the mid-90s.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite organizations. I'm always promoting HeartMath.
Oh, I love them. They are really doing their homework and their research. And what they found is that the heart's electrical field is 60 times greater in amplitude than the brain. And its magnetic field is 5,000 times greater than that of the brain, and can be detected up to 8 feet in diameter around the body. And this heart intelligence, which actually quantum biologist Raina McCready found, that one of the roles of DNA is to act as an antenna for energy fields of the heart. And their research showed that the loving state can actually alter DNA. In other words, it can produce physiological effects at the level of DNA. Imagine that.
Oh, love it. Love it. So, but you're saying in your book that when you're manifesting from the brain, you're coming more from an ego standpoint, but when you're manifesting from the heart, it's more about love and compassion and creativity, right?
Oh my gosh, yes. It's all of those things and more. We are learning so much more about that. In fact, the heart has its own brain. There's about 40,000 nerve cells in the heart. It acts independently of the brain. Even after a heart transplant, believe it or not, the nerve connections that normally connect the heart with the brain rarely, if ever, reconnect. Why? Because they don't have to. The heart is able to function on its own, independently, because of its intrinsic nervous system.
Wow.
And it gets even better, which I go into in detail, in deeper into the book. Let's just say that 6,000 years ago, in ancient India, 108 spiritual masters got out of their heads and went into their heart. And once there, they discovered that there was this vast, great universe, just like it is that we see today. The sun is where it is, the earth, the stars, the moon, everything, all the luminaries was in their proper places, but it was a different reality, okay? wrote about their experiences. And this is what is known as the Upanishads, right? So these Upanishads, written by 108 spiritual masters, all came from the heart. And this is where we're moving toward on an evolutionary level right now. This is the next human, okay? And so this is why the book was written the way it was, and I really can't take credit for it because it kind of came together on its own.
Wow.
Yeah, wrote itself, so to speak, in that sense, as far as the chapters go. So as far as it being three books into one, that, I can't take credit for that. But that process of transcending the ego, transcending the phantom self, the pain body, and then naturally the physical body will heal. It has to follow, right? And then our relationships transform, and then we become this wonderful creative self, and we're able to go out and create like we never have been able to before. We're coming up upon a new renaissance, which I mentioned in the book, that's going to dwarf the renaissance that we had back in the 15th and 16th centuries. And it's going to encompass all nations of the earth, not just one specific part of the globe. And it's going to encompass all peoples because we're going to be manifesting from the heart.
Mm.
And in the book, I give a very detailed equation in the section on heart-based manifestation on how to do that.
So let's just go into that a little bit, because I think this is so important for everybody to grasp. When we are trying to manifest money in our lives, that may very well be coming from the ego for wanting more material or safety and security. But if we turn around and start manifesting or focusing on the love for everybody else, tell us, what is the difference? Because there is a dramatic difference, but we're not getting it yet.
No, we're not getting it. And a lot of people will learn about the law of attraction through the best-selling book, The Secret. And that's fine, because that's a good introduction to it.
Right.
However, what I've found is, and what I've discovered is, that because the brain is polarized, it's got two hemispheres, it's got eight lobes, it's incapable, actually, of manifesting what you want without also manifesting what you don't want.
Right.
In other words, if you're in there for, it's all about me, I've got to make money, I've got to be a success, and this is the way it is, then, yeah, you can do that, applying the law of attraction. However, because you're manifesting from the brain, then it's going to serve up a polarized reality. It has to. That's just the way it is. Okay, we live in a dual universe. The law of duality pretty much guarantees that, as long as you are operating from the brain. Now, however, if you create from the heart, which is a whole different process altogether, and I give you, there's a seven-step equation outlined in the book. If you manifest from the heart, then you are manifesting without polarization, zero stress, zero drama, and not just do you benefit, but every soul around you benefits as well.
Mm.
So it's a mindless manifestation, a mindless creation, rather than an egoic creation or a brain-based creation. And people don't know really the difference a lot because they don't really understand what the ego is, right?
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
People say, oh, I don't have an ego, or, he's got an ego, or he doesn't have, they don't really know, understand, they just know what they've been taught, and that's fine. But in the book, that's why this is the first chapter, I go into incredible detail about what the ego really, really is and how it really controls. If the ego is operating through you, you won't know it. Right? That's the very definition of the ego. Okay, and that's most of humanity. They're ego-identified, and they don't know they are. So in other words, there's no free will.
Yeah.
ego is controlling. They're at the mercy of their own physiological reactions. And we talk about the amygdala. We go into neuroscience. We talk about how it goes back to the dinosaurs, the fight or flight mechanism, constantly reacting to everything that everybody is saying. So when you're in an argument with somebody, and in the book I give an example, say you get in an argument with a friend on the subject of abortion, right? And so your opinion clashes with hers. And then all of a sudden, the adrenaline starts to pump, the cortisol comes through the brain, and the nervous system kicks into high gear, sympathetic nervous system kicks in, and all of a sudden you're in the fight or flight mode, as if you're running away from a saber-toothed tiger, right? As if that's trying to kill you. But threat, because really that's how you're playing it out in your body. Okay, it's a fear of death. And so that's why people get to arguments. This is why people cause conflict. This is why people cause fights, cause wars. Ego says, you have a different opinion than me, therefore you are my enemy. Mm-hmm. You see?
Talk about ego, yeah.
And that's it in a nutshell. I know it sounds simple, but that's pretty much the reason why we are where we are on the world stage. The United Nations right now, they're coming together trying to quell the Arabian Spring. All of this is going on in the world. We have 17,000 nuclear warheads that are on the planet. 4,000 of them are armed and ready. We have Pakistan with over 100 nuclear warheads. Their government is becoming more unstable every day. We have, you know, Iran is rushing to build nuclear arms. We have North Korea that's rushing to build nuclear. So we have all of this that is escalating right now, what I call the quickening, because we're coming now to the end of the Mayan calendar, and we're coming into a new cycle. And this new cycle, which actually began 13,000 years ago, I mean, the cycle that we're in right now is ending that began 13,000 years ago. And a new cycle, a new 13,000-year cycle, is beginning. And that's the whole reason for the Mayan calendar. Everybody's trying, well, what's the Mayan calendar? It's the end of the world. Well, not necessarily. It's the end of the world as we know it, right? And so, like all species, it comes to the point where it means a matter of either you evolve or perish.
Right. We're at the crossroads right now.
Right. We are not at a crossroads. We are at the crossroads.
Yeah, true. And it's all based on ego, isn't it?
Right. Exactly. It's all based on ego. Everything stems from that. So that's the pseudo-self, the false self. We don't know that we are that false self because we are ego-identified. Again, so you don't, if the ego is operating in you, you don't know it. And that's the whole purpose of the book, or the first chapter at least, is to, and much of the book, is to help you awaken to that, realize that this is not who you are. You're not this temporal pseudo-self, which the ancients were well aware was preventing us from accessing our divine birthright, which is free will.
Mm. And so to stop the Third World War, to really go into the Golden Age, we have to start understanding the heart-based manifestation to get us away from that ego. And as you say in the last chapter, the ethereal self, you're talking about dissolving the fear of death. And so this is actually dissolving the fear of losing the ego. Would that be a correct assumption?
Yes, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what it is. The ego doesn't want to die. The mind doesn't want to die, obviously, because that would mean the end of the mind, the end of the ego. But it's really what it is. It's the dissolution that is your true self. And I even believe that it's a DNA encoding as the pain body is, which is really the shadow of the ego. But that's exactly what it is. And so it's afraid of dying. It's afraid, and it really, I know because I went through it. That was the year that I separated myself from my family, and that was the process where my ego dissolution began. It began on the day that my nephew Hudson was born, and that's when I started crying. I said, I just don't want to be angry anymore. And then that's when my higher self came in, and the heart came in. And that's when the heart started leading the mind, because love, I wanted to go back and love my nephew, I wanted to go back and love my family. I hadn't seen my mom in 2.5 years, and we were very close. So that love, that dissolves the ego, and that's the only thing that does. And so, as I say in the introduction and throughout the book, we have to remember, only love is real. Everything else is Maya, is an illusion.
Wow. Very, very powerful stuff. Very powerful stuff. We are all out of time, but I really want to urge the listeners to get this book, The Next Human, and especially, I mean, every part of this book is fascinating, but what we really need to focus on and get to is that heart-based manifestation. This is what we came to the planet to learn.
Right. Absolutely.
Fabulous. And I want everybody to go to jasonlincolnjeffers.com and see his fabulous website. And on it, you can see how right-brained this beautiful human being is because of his artwork. It is outstanding.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And you not only do art, but you do coaching. And I really think that you can help lift somebody up out of their ego into their heart-based self through your coaching. And on top of all the coaching and the artwork and everything, Jason also does astrology. Tell us a little bit about that before we sign off, Jason.
Okay. Yes, I'm an evolutionary astrologer. And what that is I specialize in life path readings. And so what I can do by analyzing the chart is to look at an individual's past lives. And what the chart reveals usually is what that particular soul is supposed to be doing in this life. And so a lot of people are really interested in what their life path is. A lot of them are confused, especially burgeoning next humans, believe it or not. And some call these indigo children or crystal children, rainbow children, whatever. But they really, really want to find their life path because they know it's important. So I do life paths readings and through astrology, and that's what I specialize in. So if you go to the site, you can see the little explanation of it there on the site and the different rates that I have there.
Well, Jason, we're completely out of time, but I think your book is fabulous. I think you're fabulous. I hope you'll come back on to the show and let's talk more because we've just begun with this heart manifestation, heart-based manifestation. We need to focus in more and more and more, and you are such a blessing to this earth. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jules. It's been a tremendous honor to be on your show. I am truly grateful that you had me.
Great, and we'll look forward to talking to you again. And to all my wonderful listeners, have a terrific, wonderful, going with the flow week, and we'll see you back here, same time, same place. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another great show from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send an email to Jules@loaradionetwork.com and have a great week.